You're listening to the Food Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. It's the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Hi, Sue. How are you?
I'm feeling quite fat, actually, Paul, because I've been at the Speciality and Fine Food Fair for 3 days.
I know.
Great, though, it was. I've not really eaten much for the last couple of days.
I was there one day, as you know, and I put away quite a bit as well. Yeah.
I mean, like, on the first day, I had some organic baby foods. Some coconut jerky, some soy sauce chocolates, a pea smoothie, a Malaysian curry, cassis liqueur, salt and vinegar flavoured pork scratchings.
That was breakfast on the way
a
there.
A vegan slice of something, yeah. South African macadamia nuts, marshmallows, some weird ice cream, some vermouth, a scotch egg and some powdered crickets, all in one day.
Oh, no. It's the sequence you eat
it's
things, isn't it?
Right,
and
yeah.
The combinations. I started off first thing in the morning with satay sauce and curry and then moved on to marshmallows.
Exactly. Yeah. So lots of people say, oh, God, you're so lucky to be going to this huge show with these wonderful producers eating this lovely stuff, but actually it's not quite as glamorous as it may sound.
It's work.
But every time without fail, which I really love about the food sector, producers are just a really great bunch. They're passionate.
Yeah.
I love what they do.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of them, actually.
Absolutely,
all of them. They're great.
We have a fantastic tradition of innovative food and food producers.
And people that are slightly mad.
And people that are bonkers. Absolutely bonkers.
And the combination of that is good, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. No, really good.
So we've got some sort of recordings from the show, because we just met some incredible people. So first up, we're just going to listen to three of our interviews. So I've got Fifth Dimension Chocolates with Russell Pullen. And I have to say, it's one of my favourites. Astounding, astounding chocolates. You weren't there.
I missed that. And when I arrived, everybody went, you missed the 5D chocolates.
Yeah, well, you listen to this interview. It's great. And then we've got Farrington's Rapeseed Oil, and they produce Mellow Yellow and really great oil. I use this all the time myself.
Right, okay.
So listen to the story behind that. And then the lovely Frankie Fox.
Oh, Frankie.
You were there for that
interview.
I
was there for Frankie. I remember.
And
hi, Frankie.
Of course, we're talking about beetroot ketchup, which, again, has got another great story about it.
Mm.
So shall we listen to those three in combined, and then we'll have a little chat, and then we've got some more interviews from the Speciality and Fine Food Fair from Olympia.
Let's hear from these people.
And I've just come across Cecily, who is from Coconuts Naturally. Hello, Cecily.
Hi.
And she's brought along with her some of her products. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what it is that you're doing with your looks like ice cream type stuff?
Yep, you're exactly right. It is ice cream. We make organic dairy-free ice cream. We make it from coconuts. So we use coconut cream and coconut sugar. We use a little bit of Cornish spring water, and then we use delicious flavour ingredients. So we use like fresh strawberries, all organic. We use peppermint oil. We use spirulina in our mint choc chip. We use raw cacao. It's just really good food, really clean food, and we love it.
So clean food's something that we're all hearing quite a lot about. What's your thoughts on the movement?
Well, I think the movement's great. I mean, I think the point for us about clean food and about eating clean and all of these buzzwords that you hear is that, like, we absolutely believe food has energy, and the choices we make and the food we eat can either give us energy and make us feel vitalized and full of energy, full of life, really, or we can eat food that actually takes energy from us and it makes us feel sluggish and slow and just not very great. So you know, when we say, you know, clean food, this food, especially coconuts that we make it with a lot of love, and we make it with a lot of, like, thought over what we put in, where we find our ingredients. That's why we're organic. That's why we're vegan. That's why we use proper ingredients. We don't use flavorings, nothing like that. And you feel better for it.
Brilliant. So how long have you been making your delicious ice creams?
Yeah, we've been making it now for like a year and a half, which has flown by. But March 2015, we launched. And so we've had like our first full year, and it's just going phenomenally well. We've just had such a great reception, and we're just growing, trying to keep up, but it's all good.
So is food manufacturing your background?
No, not at all. It's not. It's quite random, actually. My background is retail. So I started my career with Marks & Spencer's, which was super. Loved it there. And then I went to Oliver Bonus, another great retailer. I just found I was commuting, working in London, living in Brighton. I was really like slogging my guts out, as most people do, right? And I just knew that this was my passion. Food was my passion. Vegan food was my passion. I was a raw vegan at the time, and I was making ice cream for myself. And it was like so many other food businesses. It was literally a case of, right, I want to do something else. I love this. I think other people will love it. I think there's a market for it. If I don't do it now, when am I going to do it?
Exactly. Well done you for doing it. So I think now is a brilliant time. I've got Lucy here, who's one of our producers, to have a taste. So we're going to try the sumptuous strawberry, which we've got in front of us. It's in a nice little pot with a cute little coconut man on it. He's sweet. right, so what do you think? Really lovely. It's really smooth, isn't it?
Yeah.
And quite refreshing as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a little try of it now. If you just say... Thoughts? The strawberry really comes across, and it's not too sweet.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can kind of hang around a bit and be that quite sort of sickly sweet strawberry flavouring.
Yeah.
But this, it feels a bit like you've mashed up a strawberry and put some coconut... creamy flavouring with it. Obviously you haven't done that, but so how do you make it?
Yeah, the strawberry one is actually, it is really fresh. It's really it's really refreshing. We use 33% strawberries, and it's fresh strawberries. We use a little bit of lemon juice, a little bit of coconut sugar, and then a little bit of coconut cream, and it literally is as simple as that. That strawberry one was commended in the Free From Food Awards. It's really popular, that flavour, actually really popular.
The texture is something that I think is you've done really well. I've tried quite a lot of vegan ice creams, and that's the one thing that you notice that kind of sets them apart from your traditional ice cream, and it is that texture. And it can sometimes feel a little bit too, I can't describe it, I want to say clean, but not like an ice cream, not like that decadence. Whereas with this, and I think it might be because you're using the coconut, it does still come across as quite creamy. Right, so Lucy's just trying the mint choc chip, which is one of... Is it one of your favourite flavours, Lucy?
Yes, it is. I'm quite excited. I also see that you've got a Great Taste Award for 2016.
Yeah, that's on the mint choc chip. That's been really popular, that flavour. The mint choc chip won a Great Taste Award this year, which we were super happy about. It's definitely our most popular flavour. We use spirulina and... we use spirulina and peppermint oil, and we make our own raw chocolate chips as well, and we just mix them up. So it's a really natural colour. It's a really clean, again, a really clean taste with a peppermint oil, and a real winner, that one. People love it. That one's just come out of the deep freeze, so it's a bit hard.
I'm not trying to dig it.
So what do you think, Christy?
Really nice. I like them. I like mint choc chip as well. Nice, fresh, minty taste with a little bit of a kick of chocolate. Yeah. Really nice. So, Cecily, where do we get these from? Where are you on sale?
If people want to find us, they can just go to our website, drop us a line, stock us on our website, which is launching in like 2 days' time, relaunching, I should say. And they can, contact us through the website,
so
if they can't find us.
Give it a shout out.
Naturallycoconuts.com.
Perfect. Thank you.
So I'm with Mark Taylor of Filbert's, and Filbert is a really interesting business that he set up not so long ago that does, well, it actually is described as really interesting snacks. And we're at the Speciality and Fine Food Show 2016. It's full of exhibitors. There must be, I'm with Christy here, our producer, must be, what, 800, I reckon?
Yeah, probably a few more, actually. And not just exhibitors, but lovely, lovely food.
And in front of me, Mark's got two packets for me. Mr. Filbert's olive snack and Mr. Filbert's rosemary sea salt peanuts. So I'm going to have a little taste of the olive snack. Now, in our office, I'm well known for not ever having any lunch with me and scavenging around asking people if they've got anything for me to eat. I love olives, but I wouldn't go to a supermarket and get a tub of olives because they just go everywhere. But this is really interesting because it's a packet, and Mark's just opened the packet for me. It says a lovely olive snack, and it's marinated with lemon and oregano. How did you come across this idea, Mark? How did you come across it?
Well, there's been a considerable interest in the health benefits of Mediterranean food, and there's no better Mediterranean food than olives. If you're going to snack, snack healthily. Olives are a nugget of health, and you can put them into a bag, and it's just a case of how you, the type of olive you use, the quality of olive you use, and how you prepare it.
I've just tasted those. Lovely. That lovely natural saltiness. Are you just having some?
Yeah. Really moist as well, which is not what I expected. I have had olives in a bag before, and they can be a little bit dry, can't they? I don't know if you've ever had them, Sue.
They're really nice, really nice. Where do you actually source your ingredients from, Mark?
Well, the olives are Greek. Greek make the best olives. We use Greek Halkidiki olives, which are nice and firm and crisp. And we use the purple Kalamata olive from the Kalamata region of Greece. They are very flavoursome, very good for you, high in vitamin E, very full of fibre. And I think what sets them apart from other people in the marketplace is that we don't preserve them. We don't use any preservatives, and we don't cook them. We don't pasteurise them. So hence, that's why you said they're very flavoursome. They're nice and crisp still.
And they're moist as well, which is really good. But there's no oil in there, is there? So I haven't got stuff all over my fingers. How do you manage to do that? How have you managed to get that technology right?
To a degree, that's the secret of the way we prepare the olive. So there are some trade secrets involved in that. That's what gives us our USP as such. They are easy snacking, so they don't have any stones in. We've destoned them. We marinate them with fresh oregano and lemon and chili and black pepper, and we use a sun-dried natural Kalamata olive. And we package them in a special way that gives you a 12-month shelf life and are perfect for picnics and lunches and just snacking and enjoying a healthy snack with a glass of wine with friends.
So something on the go. Have you noticed that he's not given anything away there, Christy? It's complete trade secret.
No, nicely avoided there, Mark.
Nicely avoided. Also, we've got some rosemary sea salt peanuts, which I'm going to try in a minute. I really like peanuts, actually. And there's quite a lot of stuff around at the moment about, you know, nuts being healthy and more people eating seeds and nuts, I think. Is this popular?
Yes, I mean, rosemary is a very popular herb at the moment. Our nuts, per se, are very healthy for you because they're oven roasted. We don't fry them. We use all natural ingredients, so fresh herbs and sea salt. The rosemary, which you're tasting, is actually adhered to the nut using smoked icing sugar.
Wow, they are really, really nice. I really like those. So they've got a nice hit of rosemary. Sea salt. Then there's not that really greasy oiliness there.
No, I wouldn't say so. I really like the flavour of the rosemary, and it's there's no of that twangy aftertaste you sometimes get with nuts. Do you know what I mean, Sue?
Yeah, it's absolutely really, really like those. Where can I get them from, Mark? It's going to be my new favourite.
Without mentioning leading multiple retailers, they are available from all the best fine food outlets, your local delicatessens and farm shops, but Booth supermarkets in the northwest of England and Ocado, Waitrose. But you can also get them online at our e-shop on
www.mrfilberts.com. www.mrfilberts.com. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much indeed.
I'm sitting here with Hilary Marsh, who could well be my saviour. I believe Hilary used to be in the wine business. I'm going to ask about that in a minute. But she's got a drink, a botanical soft drink. I'm quite excited about this, Christy. And it's called Botanique, and it's for wine lovers. It's crisp, dry, white. It's a refreshing flavour. It's got 1/6 the calories of wine, and it's non-alcoholic. Is it completely non-alcoholic? Have I got that right, Hilary?
That's correct. Not alcoholic, yes.
I'm really excited to taste this, so we're going to taste some. Tell us about your background before you started making this.
Well, I was a wine merchant. I've been a wine merchant and wine consultant for quite a long time, so I know my wine, and I love my wine, but I love it a little bit too much. So I tend to drink rather in excess of the government guidelines, and essentially I wanted something for myself that would enable me to drink less, and preferably because I've become very aware of really quite how bad alcohol is for you, but I really don't intend to stop. So I wanted something that I could switch to after having a couple of glasses of wine, because otherwise I just drink wine all night. Not because I want the alcohol anymore, just because I want the taste. So I wanted to be able to have those couple of glasses of wine and then switch to something else. And I thought, well, while we're at it, why don't we make it doubly helpful and put back all those nutrients that I know perfectly well the wine's taken out. So now I can have my first couple of glasses, or possibly even three, and not feel guilty, because I know that the Botanique afterwards is going to not only slowly...
Genius. Down. Genius. It's genius. I have to say, the government guidelines are guidelines, obviously. but seriously, I think we're becoming more aware what alcohol can do to you. And certainly for me, as I'm getting older, I'm trying to be more sensible. But you do get carried away, don't you? So to have this at towards the end of the evening is quite a good idea. Mm. I'm going to taste this now. So can you tell us what's in it?
Well, I won't tell you exactly what's in it, because part of it is my secret recipe, but essentially it's made from botanical extracts, so, you know, herb spices and other things that are really good for you, like Panax ginseng, milk thistle seed, and so on. Those two are the only ones that I actually name, and I leave everyone guessing on the rest, because I love the fact that people do that kind of flavour chasing, trying to work out what it is, and they start talking about it in the way that people normally talk about wine at a professional wine tasting, except, and they forget they're talking about a soft drink. So I don't, you know, I want to keep my recipe secret, and also I don't want to spoil the fun, because I think trying to work out what's in there is part of the game.
Yeah, definitely.
Taste profile for you, Christy?
It's quite dry, which I like in a wine. And I don't know whether...
It's refreshing.
It's a little... Yeah, really refreshing and clean on the palate. But it's got like a little bit of a... I want to say gin.
Angelica. Slightly, yeah.
Yeah. Like a little bit of the taste of... That you get in some really good quality gins, those mix of flavours.
It's botanicals, isn't
yeah.
it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I guess so. I really, really like it. And one thing that I did notice as I poured it is it looks just like a champagne or a Prosecco.
Yeah, and I really like the design of the bottle. So the bottle's, you can't see through it. It's very sort of dark green, and it's quite, it feels quite turn of the century, actually, doesn't it? What do you think?
Several people have said it reminds them of the Perrier Jouet Belle Epoque bottle, which was not intentional, but since that costs about £125 a bottle, I don't mind them saying that.
Well, I really quite like it, and I don't think I would start the evening on it, I think. But I can absolutely see having a few glasses and then transferring to that and it being a blooming good idea. And also replacing some of that stuff you've lost, I think is excellent. Excellent. How much does it retail for, Hilary?
So it retails for £5.99, and we've been selling it on the website, and the average price we've been getting on the website is £5.94, so I think that price point is sort of validated now. And this, you know, the way we see it, it's the same price as an ordinary bottle of wine. So you can either have an ordinary bottle of wine, which isn't particularly good for you, even if it's nice, or you can have an extraordinary bottle of health drink, you know, because this really is like the champagne of health drinks. So
that's a really good description, actually. Yeah, champagne of health drinks. I think that absolutely describes it. And it's called Botanique, and you can go on to botanique.com. So that's botanique.com. And I'm with Tom Barnes, who's the winery manager at Biddenden Vineyard. And Tom is exhibiting at the Fine Food and Speciality Show. You've got all these wonderful, wonderful wines and ciders in front of me. Now, I know Biddenden cider quite well. Is it your family that owns the vineyard, Tom?
Yes, my grandparents started it back in 1969. My dad and my mother took over from my grandparents, and I came back full-time 5 years ago. Obviously grown up with it as, from a kid, so, yes.
So you've been drinking cider since you were a child?
Yeah, brought up on it, yeah. No, not quite, obviously. But, yeah, it's definitely part of the family, and, we're proud of what we've done, so...
So I know Biddenden cider, that's sort of strong Kentish cider, and I remember it being very cloudy at one time, and now you've got all sorts of different ranges. I believe you brought out something quite new and different recently.
Yeah, we're trying to... All our ciders are more of a wine-style cider. We recently brought out a naturally red apple juice and a naturally red cider called Red Love. That's actually... We've got stars for it at a Great Taste Awards up here at the moment as well.
So how do you get... What do you mean by naturally red? Because I'm looking at it in front of me and it almost looks like a rosé wine, slightly redder than rosé, actually. How do you get that as a natural colour when presumably you're using... Are you using the skins? Is that what's giving you the colour?
It's a new apple. It's grown up at East Morling Research in West Morling. When it's pressed, the juice comes out naturally red. We're adding some vitamin C to hold that colour. And filtering it, which is what's given us the rosé colour in the bottle. We could leave it cloudy, but we wanted to go for a clean sort of finish look.
And this research they did they actually develop a new apple, or is it some old apple that's come back, you know, that they've resurrected?
It started in Switzerland and was brought over. And we got the rights to use it for the first time, which is really exciting. It's going really well.
So you got the rights to use that particular apple, is that right?
Yeah, we got the rights for the name Red Love.
Yeah. So if anybody's looking for this particular really interesting apple juice, it's called Biddenden Red Love Apple Juice, and I presume you can get it in all sorts of places, but particularly on your website?
Yeah. Come down to the vineyard, see us. Free tours on Wednesdays and Saturdays at the vineyard. And online, on our online shop, all our products are available as wine, ciders, apple juices.
And you're based in Kent, aren't you?
We are the top star.
Okay, and I'm just having a look at some of your other stuff here. So we've got a Biddenden wines here, Pinot Reserve, and Cribble. Is that Cribble Bridge? Cribble Bridge wine, is that right?
Yeah. It's
Cribble Bridge wine, is that right?
Yeah. Cribble Bridge is the lane that the vineyard's on. So we're in Biddenden on Cribble Bridge Lane.
And do you have your own? I presume you have your own vines. You're making your own, wine from your own grapes, and you're making your own cider from your own apples. Is that right?
So we grow all the fruit for the grapes and the vineyard. We don't buy any in. It's all made on site. We grow it. We make it. We sell it. We distribute it. Same with the ciders.
And if I was deciding to make my own cider at home, you know, and just do a really simple recipe that tasted amazing, how would I make cider at home?
So you need fresh juice and some yeast and we get it together, but I just recommend you come and buy it from us.
Don't bother making your own. Just come and get mine. Yeah. Just open a bottle and it's much easier. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Come and find us and we'll sort you out. Save you the hassle.
Okay. And can you just tell us what your website address is? Your website address. What is your website?
Sure. It's www.biddendenvineyards.co.uk.
Biddendenvineyards.co.uk. I can heartily recommend it. My favourite is the strong Kentish Biddenden cider, but I'm definitely going to try the Red Love apple juice. Quite different. Thank you very much, Tom.
Yeah. Thanks for your time. Cheers.
Oops.
What did you do there for?
Oops.
What did you do there?
I played the wrong one.
You're absolutely blooming useless. Oops. Honestly. So we were supposed to be listening to 5D Chocolates, Farrington's and Foraging Fox, and we haven't. We've listened to Naturally Coconuts Vegan Ice Cream, Mr. Filbert's Botanic and Biddenden Vineyards instead.
That'll learn you for not letting me eat the chocolates, won't it?
It will, and it'll actually learn me to actually look at your schedule on your computer screen.
To check my work first. I'm sorry. Sorry, everyone.
It doesn't matter, because it was all on the same for the same show. And so my favourite, it's quite good fun actually, was talking to Botanic about this non-alcoholic sort of sparkling wine, really trying to create something that's got an interesting sort of flavour that you can actually drink. I know it's something you struggle with. It's like, what can I drink for a whole evening when I don't? I'm either driving or I don't drink alcohol.
Yeah.
And she's got a really nice brand there. And she's quite quirky and is wearing this sort of old fashioned English stuff. And it was great. And obviously a very, very experienced wine merchant. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So interesting.
I think adding that to the drink market is a really good idea because, as you quite rightly say, there's the drink driving things. People like me that are teetotal and more of us increasingly. And just sometimes you just don't want alcohol.
What she's saying is having one or two glasses and then going on to that afterwards, you know, which is a really good idea. Yeah. Another favourite of mine was the Filbert's Nuts. Really, really enjoyed those. Yeah. They were great and good quality. And of course, Biddenden is something I grew up with in a way.
Right.
It was one of the first things that you used to sneak when you were like 15 or 16 was Biddenden cider, because it was renowned for being incredibly strong.
Right.
and they've just gone from strength to strength. Biddenden Vineyards.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Do you like that? Anyway, we are going to play the ones we were going to play, aren't we? Got it actually queued up? Right, I'm going to check.
I have got it queued up. You need to check now.
I'm checking on your screen. So we are actually going to listen to Russell Pullen, the 5D Chocolates, and then the Mellow Yellow brand of rapeseed oil, which is excellent, may I say, produced by Farrington's. And of course, your favourite, Frankie Fox.
Absolutely.
Of Foraging Fox, who's got a nice story to tell.
Absolutely.
Even though you're not a great fan of beetroot, are you?
I'm not a massive fan of beetroot, no. I did enjoy that she had three flavours.
That's right.
And I did certainly enjoy one of them, and I would have applied it to a burger without any shadow of a doubt.
Yeah. Can you press the right button this time, do you think?
I'm going to press a button and I'm just hoping I've got fingers and everything crossed
say,
that it's the right thing.
If you put the wrong one on, we're going to stop you and put the right one on.
You're going to kill me. I've only got a choice of one, so let's hope it's the right one and I haven't got the same one twice. What do you reckon?
Let's listen to Russell first, shall we?
Let's go.
We're at the Speciality and Fine Food Fair 2016 and it's day one. It's Sunday. It's absolutely jam-packed full of people. And I have the most amazing looking chocolates in front of me. I mean, they literally are works of art. There's a chocolate that's like a yellow dome with speckled red on it. There's a beautiful square chocolate with what look like moons on there, a sort of copper colour. They almost look too good to eat. And they're made by Fifth Dimension Chocolates. And I have Russell Pullen with me. Russell, how do you make these beautiful chocolates?
They're all handmade, and that's why they look so nice. It's a lot of care and attention goes into making them.
I can see that. I can see that. And you actually, so do you actually make the chocolate yourself, or do you get the chocolate in and then make it into shapes?
Yeah, I get the chocolate in. So to me, chocolate is like flour is to a baker. Somebody else will make the actual chocolate, and then I just make that chocolate into nice products.
So you're almost a sculptor.
Yeah, you could say a chocolate sculpture, yeah.
And I know you use single sort of origin cocoa. Can you just tell us exactly what does that mean? Because there's a lot of bad chocolate around using vanilla and sugar and all sorts of other things. What gives chocolate its distinctive flavour for me is the actual cocoa bean itself and where it comes from. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, single origin, basically, it's like a grape. A lot of people will recognise grapes go into wine, and you get a grape from a different region, say France, has a different flavour from the same grape, maybe grown somewhere else. And cocoa is exactly the same. So if I get chocolate from Colombia. Now, the South American beans have got a completely different flavour characteristic from the ones in Africa. And single origin is really, you can go down to a single country. So chocolate from Colombia is single origin. You can actually go down to regions of that country as well. So some of my chocolate, I use two types of chocolate from Colombia from different regions, and they both have completely different flavour characteristics. There's one which comes from inland and it's kind of higher up, and another one which comes from around by the sea level, and they've got two different flavours. So single origin is basically taking on the flavours from the terroir. It could be the salt that comes from the sea, it could be the soil. It's all to do with the weather conditions and everything.
So it really is, it almost is like grapes growing for wine, and very much so. Now, Christy is looking, yeah, she's sort of dribbling a little bit, really. So Russell, what do you recommend that Christy should taste first? And just describe the chocolate, the one of your favourite ones here, and what's in it?
Well, my favourite one at the moment is a new one I'm doing, which is the mint and miso. One thing that I like to do with chocolate is I like to work with flavours. That's the one there. I like to work with chocolate and flavour. Now, to me, chocolate has its own flavour, but it can work very, very well with other flavours. And I like to match the flavours with the chocolate. So I like to get it so that the flavour that you get when you taste that mint and miso, you also get the chocolate flavour come through as well. Yeah.
That tastes lovely. You wouldn't think miso would go with mint. but you get that lovely salty hit and a little bit of mint at the end, and then followed by the smooth chocolate.
Yeah, it finishes like that's what I want everyone to get. To me, it's the chocolate that's the star, and I'm just trying to sort of like make it a little bit more interesting. So you're getting that chocolate, but you're getting other flavours as well.
Really, really nice. I do like the miso in there. What do you think, Sue?
I've just tasted that, and you know I'm not a great fan of chocolate, but that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I actually like miso soup quite a lot. I don't really have miso in anything else, but I do have miso soup quite a bit. Weirdly, that tastes like miso with caramelly chocolate.
Yes.
And actually it's fine.
Yeah, it works. You must have a very good flavour palette there to think of that idea, because it really does work. I guess it's a bit like salty caramel, though, like just like onto the next level of that.
My next level from salted caramel is this one, which is, this is a milk chocolate one, but this is soy caramel. So it's using soya sauce. Now, soya sauce is very, very salty. So I was thinking, what can I do to salted caramel to make it a little bit different? And it's like soya sauce. It's an unusual because people think of savoury, but I think it works really well.
This is bizarre. You should see Christy's face. Okay, she's eating soya sauce chocolate.
It's so weird, but so nice. And I'm not just saying that. What do you think? So it really does. It like just shocks you a little bit, doesn't it?
Wow. I so like that. It is odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is delicious.
It's like
that.
We're like two little kids in a sweet shop. Yeah.
Right, we're going to have to try some more. Right, tell us some more, Russell.
Okay. I've also got another one, which is lemon chutney. And that's got a little bit of chilli in it as well. Now, this is an interesting one.
Can I just say, Russell, I think you're slightly bonkers. I just worked this out.
Well, you seem to be enjoying yourself.
It's
lemon chutney. Now, there's a little story to this, because there's another small food company. He makes his own lemon chutney. And he was convinced it would work with chocolate. And I thought, I'll give it a go and try it. And I think it works really, really well, because you've got that lemon, but you get a little bit of a chilli kick at the end of it.
What's really interesting is I'm watching Christy eat this chocolate, and because we know that these chocolates are rather bizarre and weird, you can see she's really, really thinking about the taste as she's eating, which is not many products where you... you're trying to really think your way through what can I feel, what can I taste. I'm going to have a little taste of that. You explain what you're thinking of that one.
So the chili kick that you were talking about, it's right at the very, very end. Yes. And that's why I think Sue was saying that my facial expression was a bit weird, because I was waiting for it. So you get the first little sour hit of the lemon.
Oh, it's just gone in my tongue.
Yeah. You've got the nice, it's milk chocolate, that one, round it, so it's quite a gentle, like, you know, build-up of the chocolate. And then right at the very end, once you've swallowed it, you get that little chilli kick, which is lovely.
That one's a bit odd for me. I'm my favourite so far is soy sauce. Right, yeah. let's try another one.
A new one I'm doing as well this year is curry and raisin.
Oh my goodness.
Are you serious? The thing is, when you look at these chocolates, they are beautiful. They're like works of art. They're like little paintings or little sculptures or whatever.
They really are.
And then obviously Russell's saying that there's this most bizarre thing. I mean, it's almost like they're hidden. It's like a surprise when you eat them.
If you want something not quite as bizarre, there's an apple calvados one.
Oh. Okay, but I'm going to try this other one first. What did you say this was? Curry and...
curry and raisin.
Curry and raisin, right.
And then, should I have a bite first of the curry and raisin?
Yeah,
or?
Go on. And she's concentrating. And your thoughts on this one, curry and raisin chocolate?
I do like it. I'm trying to think of what it's like.
You get the in this one, you'll get the sweetness from the raisins, and then the curry mixture I've actually had made specially. So it's not one off the shelf in the shop. It's been made specially for the chocolates. And hopefully you're just getting the characteristics of the curry rather than just the heat. You should get the curry, and I think it just works really well with the sweetness.
I think it's the cardamom I can taste a little bit in that one.
So yeah, so I've got the raisin's very sweet, but it's natural sweetness. You know that you get when you get a really nice sherry, for example, and it's got that natural raisin taste. That's got a lovely raisin taste. And then all of a sudden, this sounds really weird, Christy, I've got the sweetness on my tongue, round the edge of my mouth, right, you know, sort of where your cheeks are, around the edge of your mouth. I've got curry, which is like mad.
It really is, but then again, like I was saying earlier on, I like salted caramel. I like that savour, like especially the saltiness and those strong flavours with the quite extreme sweetness. So I like it, and I know what you mean about being around the side of your cheeks. It's just a weird sensation, isn't it?
This man's a bit of a magician. Right, so I'm going to try calvados and apple, I think you said, Russell.
Yeah, apple.
Tell me a little story about that one.
Well, this one was a hard one for me to do, because apple is actually quite a difficult flavour to work with chocolate. It's not such a strong flavour. And it took me quite a long time to get this right. When I'd actually done it and figured out the way to make it, and just adding that little bit of calvados just lifts the apple out slightly.
That is delicious. I like calvados anyway, but that is delicious. What's interesting for me is, I don't know how to describe it on the radio, but I think, you know, you get coffee creams, and actually all it is I don't know, chocolate that just happens to be flavoured. This is right inside. I don't know how to explain it. And it's almost like eating, I don't know, an apple pie or something. It almost feels like you've got the texture of apple, but it's not because it's chocolate. And then you've got a tiny, tiny bit of alcohol on it. It's it couldn't be further away from liqueur chocolate than you could imagine.
No, they feel so decadent. All of the ones that we've tried so far with the soft centres in the middle, they just feel like a real treat, don't they?
Right, we're going to try one last one. I have to say, the soya sauce one is still my favourite.
Yeah,
it's a revelation.
It's up there for me as
total
well.
Revelation. And listen, we try all sorts of amazing, weird and wonderful things. That is total. It is a revelation to me. Like, final one, Russell.
Right. There's two which you'll have to decide which one. Okay. I've got basil. Fresh basil as well. I've got whole grain mustard.
Oh.
And that one as well.
Right.
We're going to have to do both,
one,
I'm sorry.
One each, yeah? So which one are we
going for? I'm
going to
go for basil, you're going to go for mustard.
Mustard.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for that, C.
Okay. Mine is mine's like a dome, about the size of a 10p piece, but it's a dome, and it's got green colouring at the top.
It looks like a marble. It looks amazing. Yeah. That's my favourite looking one out of all the ones we've had today. Right, I'm going to try my one, which is like... a square sort of traditional looking chocolate, but with little raised squares above it, like little building blocks, and it's mustard.
Yeah, I've just tried the basil one. I'm not sure about that one, actually, Russell. And I love basil. Not sure about that. I'd like Christy to taste that in a minute. Can I nick your mustard one? Mustard chocolate, that's weird.
Oh, there's a mustard. I was thinking, I can't taste the mustard. No, it's not. I couldn't taste it at first. I was thinking, I'm waiting for it, and then there it is, big kick.
That's the thing with a chocolate ganache. You can actually find flavours will come out. As a chocolate melts, the flavour comes out of it. So you bite into it, and you expect the whole grain mustard. Where is it? And suddenly you feel it come through.
That wasn't very strong for me. That it's just got an underlying mustardiness.
I've done it not to be too strong because, as I said earlier on, I like the chocolate to be the star. So I don't want to overpower the chocolate. It's something that I think it just works alongside the chocolate.
I've just tried the basil one, and it's quite strong, isn't it? For the, you know, out of all of them, the basil has really got that hit. Whereas you use it in savoury food, and you have to use quite a bit, don't you, to get any sort of flavour. I did like it. It's nice.
I'm really sorry, I said I wouldn't do this, but I'm going to have another one because they're so good. I don't even like chocolate. I'm going to go for... Have you got the... what is yuzu? What is that?
I'm going to point that one out, yeah. Yuzu and pink peppercorn. Yuzu is a Japanese citrus fruit, so it's kind of a cross between a lemon and a lime. It's quite intense. And with this one, you should get... The yuzu comes through straight away. As that melts, you should get the pink peppercorn just... kind of lift up from underneath as it disappears.
That is nice. The citrusiness of it just is such a massive flavour hit, isn't it? And then you need that pepper just to balance it out and give it a little bit of heat
After a few seconds, and then the pepper just takes over from it. But that's what I'm about, is it's kind of taking people on a journey with chocolate. You know, so you don't just eat a chocolate and think, yeah, that's good, I like the chocolate. You're thinking, well, I've got this flavour. It's like tasting a nice wine. Yeah. You're getting different flavours come through as the chocolate develops in your mouth.
Well, extraordinary is all I've got to say.
We've had a lot of fun doing this guest, haven't we?
Extraordinary. So it's Fifth Dimension chocolates. I can't even really explain to you, really, what I've just eaten, but they're incredible and beautiful, beautiful to look at. You've got to try these things. The website is www.5dchocolates.com. So that's the number 5, then dchocolates.com. I presume, Russell, you can order them online?
Yes, we sell everything online.
You so have to get these if you've got a Christmas present for somebody. They're just fantastic.
Absolutely amazing. Thank you very much for coming to see us today.
I do think you're slightly mad, though, Russell. I just have to say I'm sorry about that.
It helps, I think.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I've got a beautiful bottle of rapeseed oil here. I cook with rapeseed oil a lot because it cooks at a very high temperature. It's got less saturated fat than olive oil, and it's got the most beautiful, beautiful colour. The bottle I've got in front of me is called Mellow Yellow Rapeseed Oil, and it's made by Farrington's. And in front of me, I have Duncan Farrington, who's the managing director. I presume he owns the company. How on earth did you get into making rapeseed oil? I think you have your own fields, don't you, of rape?
So I was Britain's first producer of cold-pressed rapeseed oil. How did I get into it? I actually researched it at university, which is, as we were just saying, not far from where you guys are based. So I did, as part of my degree, I looked into rapeseed, and I actually, while I was doing the research, found out what a wonderfully healthy, delicious oil it is. And in Britain at the time, no one was aware of that.
Do you use it to cook with, Kristen?
Do you know what? I'm a bit of a heathen with rapeseed. I've never used it. I've probably tried it, but I can't place it, so it's an education for me.
Yeah. It's got a really nice taste, actually. I think it's quite a buttery taste for an oil, don't you think?
Right. No, it's interesting you say buttery, because about 1 in 10 people get the butteriness. If you taste butter, you don't taste nutty, seedy flavour, no doubt.
I do taste a bit of nutty, seedy, I have to say, but I actually feel it has got... I don't know how to explain it. I think it's the texture of it is slightly buttery more than anything. But I think it's in many respects, unless you get very, very, very good olive oil, I think it's much better than the general extra virgin olive oil. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with all of that. What I'd say is it's a very smooth oil. So there's no bitter aftertaste. It doesn't overpower. And it's all about education, because people say, oh, well, it doesn't have the flavour of a robust olive oil. No, it doesn't. So they actually complement each other. You wouldn't want to use a really strong olive oil for baking a lemon drizzle cake, for example, or we have Michelin star chefs use it for delicate seafood, because the rapeseed oil allows other flavours to come through. But what it does have is this subtle nutty flavour. I imagine I get the flavour of hazelnuts or raw ground nuts or maybe sunflower seeds. Some people also get the butteriness. I get where the butteriness comes from. It's that smoothness that doesn't give a bitter taste. But also in there, you've got the green grass smell, green grass flavour as well. So it has its own flavour. And with that flavour, it's wonderful for maybe making salad dressings, mayonnaises. But at the end of the day, when you use it for cooking as well, being high temperature, it doesn't burn and it doesn't overpower the food that you're cooking with it.
Yeah, for me, you can cook very, very fast, very high with rapeseed oil in a way that I probably wouldn't with olive oil.
Yeah, it has a smoke point of about 230 degrees. So compared to other oils, it is your roasting and stir frying oil.
What do you think now? Have you tasted it? A little bit of a taste there?
Yeah, I've tasted it. I don't get the butteriness. I just get the hazelnut when Duncan just said about that. I definitely got that quite sort of nutty flavour. And it's quite... It doesn't hang around in your mouth for long afterwards. It's quite a clean-cutting oil. I like it.
And for me, good for salad dressings as well, I think.
Yeah, I again agree. And actually, what Chris has just said, you said exactly the same as Jamie Oliver said. Good, clean, and doesn't hang around. It's not oily, is it? So it's not sitting on your tongue creating this oily texture that lingers. So well done you.
Explain to me the difference between cold press and hot press. I mean, cold pressing stuff is really important, isn't it, in terms of flavour. So we get quite a lot of products where people are saying it's cold pressed. It's really important for rapeseed oil to be cold pressed, isn't it?
So cold press, it's very traditional. There's two food processes that are ancient. They've been, you know, ever since biblical times, grinding flour and pressing oil. Cold press, so we think of olive oils. Well, just think of rapeseed. Rape is a seed. It's a little tiny black seed. It's not a fleshy fruit that olive is, but we are using a similar process. We're taking those seeds and we're gently squeezing them. We aren't heating them at all, and it's the pure friction from the mechanical pressing that creates enough heat around about 30 degrees that releases the oil from the seed. At that point, we just pass it through a filter, which is basically like a big tea strainer, and it takes out any bits of sediment, and we put it in a bottle. Job done. So in the bottle of Mellow Yellow, you have the natural flavour and the natural colour. It does have a yellow colour. It also has, if you look at the headline figures, and nutrition is similar to any other rapeseed oil, or often called vegetable oil, found in a supermarket. However, it's the micronutrients that we are not destroying. We're retaining all those because we aren't heating it when we're pressing it, because we aren't refining it, we aren't processing it, we aren't bleaching it, and we are not deodorizing it, we have a higher content of carotenoids, we have a higher content of phenols and sterols and all these little micronutrients that are good for us. We don't really understand them, but they're all in there. They add to the whole flavor and the character and everything else.
And the problem is, as soon as you have heat, you know, in a process, you are going to destroy some of those things, which is why for me cold pressing at this temperature is really important, especially with something like rapeseed oil.
Yes, and remember, you know, we do need to eat cooked food, but whenever you cook things, whether you're cooking a piece of bacon or whether you heat an oil, it will change. When you boil an egg, it goes very much changes, doesn't it? It goes from a liquid to a solid substance. So foods do change when you heat them. However, what you have with Mellow Yellow is the chance to use it in its natural form when you use it in a salad dressing cold, and you get all those advantages. And then you also have the advantage of being a high temperature oil that doesn't break down as quickly as other oils or fats. All oils and fats will break down in time, but with a high smoke point, It means that it takes temperature much better, and then you have the advantage of enjoying cooked food but still getting the good nutrition from the oil it's cooked in.
And of course it's British.
That, definitely, yes. What else can I say? So as I said, I was the first person in Britain, but I'm very proud of our provenance. We grow it, we press it, we bottle it all on our farm. We do it to high environmental standards with the Leaf Mark logo and the Leaf Mark accreditation that we have on our products. And we've grown very well over the years. So now I'm buying it off two other neighbouring farmers. And before we buy it off them, they have to be Leaf Marked as well. So we're spreading our success to them. We can pass on some of the
sort of know-how and also your quality control is being spread your quality control is being spread across to them as well. The standards that you want are being passed on to your next door farmers, so to speak.
That's it, and we have to work very closely with them. They have to go through a lot of work to get the Leaf Mark accreditation, and that's why they get some of the advantage of a premium that we pay them. But also, before we press any oil, we take it in, we do trial samples and analyse it and to make sure it is absolutely tip top.
Well, I cook with it. I think you should give it a try, actually, Christy, with your family. And we can get it in most places. I've seen it in quite a few places. But if I was looking for it, it's called Mellow Yellow Rapeseed Oil. And where can we find it?
So you can find it nationally in all good supermarkets. I don't know. Do you want me to name?
Yeah,
all right. So, right. Okay. So say what we want, right? So, yes, we're in the main supermarkets, Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, Ocado, online, obviously, Ocado, Amazon, and then nationwide with all good independents and deli shops and farm shops. So we've got lots of customers. I mean, I've been doing it a reasonable amount of time now. We try to look after our customers, and we're proud to be sold around the country.
So definitely, if you have not used rapeseed oil before, I suggest you try it. And Mellow Yellow is a good place to start. Thank you very much, Duncan.
Thank you, Sue.
I've got beetroot ketchup by The Foraging Fox is the brand. And it just says underneath, good with everything.
Because we're spoonless at the moment, and we've
have you sent somebody else?
We've dispatched Lucy to get spoons. Mm. Let's have a quick chat about this.
Yeah.
First of all, Frankie.
We're joined by Frankie Fox, which is why it's called Foraging Fox.
Yeah, yeah.
Named after my dad. So he was the original Foraging Fox. He's a plant and mushroom expert. Oh. And I used to go foraging with him as a child. So sadly, he passed away a few years ago, so I really couldn't call it anything else. So
this is in tribute of your dad. What was your dad's name?
Roland.
Right, so this is for Roland. Roland Fox.
Good job it wasn't Basil.
Yeah, Basil Fox, yeah. So let's have a look. Spoons have arrived.
Yep.
I'm going to try... I'm going to try the original for starters. Try an apple. Oh, wow. Mm. So, getting the apple in that. Tell us what's in it.
So it is a blend of beetroot and apple, a little bit of red wine vinegar, a little bit of brown sugar, a little bit of sea salt and spices, and that is it. The whole point is nothing else. It was things that you could recognise from your store cupboard or something from the garden, and it's all natural.
And what do you put that on? Because I'm thinking, I don't think that's a burger one for me. That's not what you'd put on a burger. What would you use that for?
Funnily enough, I was going to say entirely the opposite.
Would you?
I was going to say I would actually put that on a burger.
No?
Yeah, I would put down a burger because I like that, and I thought it would fix a burger. What I wouldn't use it with is egg and bacon.
Oh God.
Right, I'm going to do that in a minute.
I would put that on a burger, the hot one.
Now, I say it's not hot. It's actually more of a warm hug. Because it's
I'm rubbish at chili. Everybody knows that I'm rubbish at chili, so whatever.
That's good for you, because I must say, I have tried some things that are so eye-wateringly hot, and I didn't want it to really mask the flavour of the beetroot and the apple, because actually, they're quite delicate flavours. But this is actually quite robust. I actually have this one with a little bit of creme fraiche and have it with hot smoked salmon.
Okay. Oh, no, that's a good idea. Or mackerel. Actually, nice with mackerel.
With a mackerel and an orange salad. And I actually mix it with a bit of olive oil and drizzle it over. So
I've just tried that hot beetroot. It's the just right for me, because I can't do more than that. Is it hot enough for you?
I'm a hot freak. I love chilli and I love hot things. But you don't want something like a ketchup that's going to just take away the taste of the rest of your food. That would be silly, because you might just as well eat the ketchup. Yeah. So it is hot, or it's warm. I think your description, Frankie, is best. It's a warmish, it's spicy, it's got a kick to it, but it's not going to mask whatever you're putting it on.
I'd put that on, if you had a barbecue and you had sausages, you know, on the barbecue, and put those in a roll, definitely put that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would still have that on a burger. And I like the idea of having it with salmon or something like that, or mackerel.
Now, I love smoked food. Smoked beetroot ketchup, I definitely would have that one. Taste that, Paul. We'll see what you think. Oak smoked. How do you make that?
The beetroot over oak chips for a few hours. And so, because the whole point of the range is it's got to be natural, and there's so many smoky flavours, and actually they're very artificial, and so we wanted to really go back to basics. And I've smoked a lot of beetroot over a lot of different woods, and that came out.
So when you get these smoked products, especially with sauces and things, it's literally injected with a smoke flavouring, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's not what you've done at all. You've taken beetroot that you've grown, and then you've smoked it over oak chips.
Yes, I think it's going back to basics, and that's the reason why smoky says so. That is what a barbecue sauce should taste like for me.
That's a great sauce. I like that.
Do you know what? Do you know what? I was just thinking about this. Do you know what I might do with some of this? Mm. Is do you know those?
It.
Do you know those vegetable crisps you can get? Have you seen them?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would use that
Nims.
As a dip. Huh?
Nim. Do you know Nim?
Yeah, like
Nim's.
Yeah, like Nim's vegetable crisps. Yeah. So, you know, parsnip and all the rest of it. I would use that as a dip as well.
Fresh. And actually, I really love it with sweet potatoes. So the hot one, I would actually, again, creme fraiche and just sweet potatoes or polenta chips, actually. Yeah. The smoked with polenta chips is absolutely stunning.
So just very briefly before we finish, tell us where you are with the company now, because you haven't been going very long at all, have you?
No. So we actually started here in 2014. I bought literally a box of handmade.
And this is at the Speciality in Fine Food show.
Absolutely, yes. Speciality in Fine Food show. I had a box of handmade ketchup. And I really wanted to see if it was worth forming a company and going for it. And we had an amazing response from it. So this is our second anniversary. And the first time we've actually showcased all three ketchups. So I came with the original in 2014. We launched the hot January 2016, and the smoked just this May. So really have been sort of, it's been phenomenal actually. It's been brilliant. Hard work, but brilliant.
That's because the product's good. Paul, you're a businessman. Mm. Lots of people spend a lot of money on these trade exhibitions, and it's expensive to have to have somewhere like this for 3 days in Olympia. Mm. Do you think it's a good idea what Frankie's doing is actually use this as a test and actually bring some of your first samples and see whether it's going to take off in the market? You know, is that a good idea rather than spending shed loads of money coming somewhere like this and then you don't get any buyers?
Absolutely. And it is expensive and it's scary, but really you could save yourself a lot of money in the long term. Yeah, because if you come here and there are buyers here and there are people in the market, if they go, do you know what, don't like your product,
and they know, don't they, because they buy hundreds
of products. You know, it doesn't mean that it's the end, but you've got some good feedback to change it. If they go, do you know what, I like that, or could you do a chocolate flavored one or whatever, then you know where to go. Yeah. It's called product testing. And product testing is the most important thing you can do in any business launch, yeah. because so many people get passionate about whatever it is they've spotted a gap in the market for, and they commit themselves fully to it without ever putting it in front of a customer. Yeah. And the fact that you like it, or as you said yourself, Frankie, your kids like it and some of your family like it, but at the end of the day, you've got to sell it in a mass market, and the mass market's got to like it.
And these buyers here are pretty brutal because they've got delis or they represent a chain of supermarkets.
Yeah.
They're going to tell you straight away, aren't they? If it's not going to make them.
Yeah, it just ain't going to work. They're going to go, it ain't going to work. It's not necessarily game over to be told that.
No.
But do you know, it's so useful, and you can save yourself a shed load of time and money by having the courage to come and try something somewhere like this.
Yeah, so you want to take a leaf out of Frankie's book, and if you've got something, maybe use somewhere like this as a test bed. And there is this little small business area where you can have not a fully fledged stand, but a little sort of pop up thing. So it's a good place to go. I really like the smoked beetroot.
I need to ask a question.
Go on then.
As a brown sauce man, and Frankie said her hubby is a brown sauce man.
Yeah.
And he's got a favourite of those. Yeah. And I just wondered if we have similar tastes. So
smoked.
I went for the smoked.
Me too. What about your husband?
Actually, no. My husband likes the original.
Right.
And I like the smoked.
Okay.
So, and I'm a barbecue sauce person.
Okay.
And my business partner loves the hot. So we're all different. But I didn't think I'd ever wean him off the brown sauce. But he hasn't touched it in years now.
Right.
Good, a bit of loyalty, that's what I like to see. Mind you,
she never buys brown sauce.
No, that's true. So he hasn't got any.
We've got his beetroot stuff.
There's none in the cupboard, sorry, mate. Try this beetroot stuff, yeah. Okay. Well, it's lovely to meet you, and good luck with it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frankie.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Take care.
Oh, we had fun, didn't we?
We did. Everybody's so nice in the food business.
Yeah, they are.
They're just so lovely. Mm. and poor old Frankie's husband got no chance of getting any HP at all. There's none in the house. So.
Yeah, sorry, Mr. Frankie.
Exactly. So we've got some more of these lovely interviews next week. Mm. I think we were only going to do a 2-week special for Speciality and Fine Food Fair. But there were so many astounding products. I think we might do 3 weeks on the trot, if that's okay, Paul, because great people. And it was such a good way of reaching out to so many very varied, actually, varied producers, all sorts.
Absolutely. There was such an eclectic bunch of people and different foods, black saffron and marshmallows and satay sauce and just a whole range of things. It would be a shame not to do it. So, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, and I think we really have to get the distribution right, because there's so many of those things I do want to buy and have all the time.
Mm.
And getting stuff on the website is fine, but that's quite difficult if there's 10, 20 products that you really like and you want those in your weekly shop.
Yeah.
So we've really got to crack the distribution model.
If there's anyone out there listening, supply chain. We need some supply chain innovation here. That's what we need.
Yeah, or some really good advice if you're a producer, how best to sort of crack that element.
Yeah.
Very difficult, of course, when you've got frozen products or you've got products that need to be heated.
Yeah.
The internet's great, but internet shopping in that way makes it quite difficult. It makes it expensive because your packaging becomes incredibly expensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. But I did have a really good time. I still think of the ones we've heard today. And you didn't taste them. The Fifth Dimension chocolates. The innovation of those guys was fab. And if you get a chance to go on the website and have a look at their stuff, it's extraordinary, extraordinary.
Oh. Cool. Hmm. Yeah, I didn't get that, did I?
No, mustard chocolate. What's that about?
Yeah.
What's that about? But beautiful stuff. So very good.
See, I'm a big fan of chili chocolate, which is quite popular these days. But
this was even one step beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One step beyond.
Bit of madness.
Yeah. Cool.
So should we? Should have some more of those next week?
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. There are loads of interesting people to talk to. I kind of guess that's about it for this week.
It is. And if anybody's interested in any of the producers at Speciality and Fine Food Fair, you can still go onto the web, go onto the Speciality and Fine Food Fair website, and check any of the hundreds of producers that we're exhibiting.
Fantastic. You've been listening to the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson, and we'll be back with you next week.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.